August 7th, 2024, meeting of the Flavanna Board of Supervisors. We will start with President Lewis.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Amen. Motion for adoption, will you then?
You better add some changes first.
Yes, changes?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, I got something.
Yeah, can we add a few things? So one, under new business, can we add declaration of local emergency? Number two, under new business, digital inclusion planning grant. And then number three, we just need to have a reaffirmation of the special call meeting yesterday to note and to recognize Mr. Hodge's virtual attendance for that meeting.
All right. And also to remove the special presentation at the beginning.
Thank you. Yes, thank you. Just make sure. And then the other one under item C, to pull item C because that was approved at the special call meeting yesterday.
So, Tim, you were talking about what was the special presentation?
The special presentation after the adoption of the agenda, to remove that as they will not be able to make it this meeting or any future ones. Because he goes to college soon.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to take the script to two minutes.
Okay. All right, anything else?
Adopt the agenda with the changes so made.
Second. Motion made by Sheridan, second by Mr. Hodge. All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Chair votes aye, 5-0. All right, administrator's report.
Yeah, I've got a few things to report, Mr. Chair, members of the board. So one, I want to announce a few new employees. Chandler Lee started with the sheriff's office as a deputy sheriff. He started July 15th. Also want to welcome Sanaya Dabney with the sheriff's office as a summer intern. She started July 15th. And then Austin Mays also started with the sheriff's office as a deputy sheriff, and he started August 5th. So at the library, 125 kids came out to see the Lake Monticello Water Rescue and Ambulance on Fire Truck Day. They made, also the kids made rope buckets with 44 teens and adults that were there. Dinosaurs invaded the library and visited with 30 kids. And then stopped by and played life-size Candyland all this week. So they've been having lots of good programming at the library. Sweet Art Emporium, who is up kind of a few business doors down from Food Lion, they're having a ribbon cutting ceremony because they're expanding their business. They went into one space and they've expanded to an additional space for their pottery studio expansion. That ribbon cutting ceremony will be August 10th, 2024 at 11 a.m. So, like I said, happy to see that they're doing well. So, Flavanna County kickball team. So, there are 16 Flavanna County employees that went to Goochlin County on July 26th to play against four other counties for the inaugural county versus county kickball tournament. So, the counties included were Flavanna, Goochlin, Hanover, Henrico, and Powhatan. First game was proceeding. Flavanna beat Goochlin 9-8. The second game was semifinals. Flavanna beat Goochlin. They had two teams, 6-4. And so Flavanna went into the championship game, and we lost to Henrico by 2-5. But I think everyone there had a good time. Lots of good kind of bonding and kind of teamwork. And like I said, it was good to see all the counties kind of come get together, kind of do a little something different.
That's awesome.
And that was just kind of a picture there of everyone that participated on the kickball team.
Wow.
Also, at Pleasant Grove Park, so there have been, Mr. Spitzer has added four handicapped parking spots to the entrance of the soccer fields. Again, they're in the grassy area trying to get some spots closest to the soccer fields. So people don't have to go as far from the gravel lots there. So the closest handicap parking spot is about 25 feet from the entrance now. And the project was completed in-house out of the Parks and Rec operating budget. And so, like I said, we have something a little closer for those that are attending out of the fields there. And, you know, hopefully as time goes on, we can do something a little more, you know, permanent as time goes on. But we wanted to certainly get something in place kind of initially, so it's closer proximity for those with accessibility issues.
Thank you.
Also, Parks and Rec held four different themed weekly camps for ages 7 to 12 year olds during the months of June and July. They had a theme park week, which is a 3-day camp, and total attendance for that over the 3 weeks of 28 children. They had a cave week, which was a 5-day camp held two different weeks, and they had 17 kids attend over those 2 weeks. They had a Museum Explorers Week, which was a 5-day camp held two different weeks, and they had 19 kids for those 2 weeks. And lastly, they had Art Week, which was a 5-day camp that was held 2 weeks, and they had 14 children attend. Total attendance for all the camps was 78 kids. You can kind of see some of the pictures to the side. They had a good time, and thanks to Mr. Spitzer for all the programming that he does for the community. Groovin' at the Grove. So we have two final Groovin' at the Grove events at Pleasant Grove. One is this Saturday, August 10th. With that, we'll have food trucks, Blue Ridge Pizza, and Rifles on Wheels. And then there's also Beer Garden, and we're going to use the nonprofits to do the beer gardens, and any profits that are made stays with the local sports organizations. And then our final one of the season is Saturday, September 14th, and the band will be Joe the Spy, and we'll have a food truck on that one and a beer garden as well. You know, we're looking at this Saturday, August 10th, as far as weather's concerned, and oddly enough, now we're not sure what's going to happen from now and then, but the weather forecast looks like it's going to be absolutely beautiful come Saturday morning, sunny. Now the ground may be certainly saturated, and I know we've had to deal with trees down before, so hopefully that's not a challenge that we deal with. But anyway, last two final Groovin' at the Groves. Again, food and beverages start at between 4 and 7, and live music is between 5 and 7. And then also the county fair is coming up too, which will be the following week, actually starting Thursday, August 15th, and that'll go through Saturday, August 17th. And so the schedule's there. Anyone wanting to certainly attend, there's going to be lots of good things like every year. They'll certainly have a lot of, there'll be music, there'll be rides, there's going to be, what else we have, Axe Women Show, there's beer gardens, there's, my eyes are bad in this time. Carnival closes at 10, but anyway. Our fair keeps on growing when a lot of other localities are shrinking, so kudos to Mr. Spitzer and his team for kind of putting that together. It's a great event for the community.
Amen.
And then just some upcoming meetings. Wednesday, August 21st, we have a regular meeting at 6 p.m. Wednesday, September 4th at 5 p.m., we have a regular meeting. And then Wednesday, September 18th at 6 p.m., we will have a regular meeting. Just a couple reminders, and we'll... It's already on your calendar, but remember, next Wednesday, August 14th, you all should have received an email about the Jamboree Water Authority groundbreaking ceremony. And so that starts at 10:30. And then August 24th is the Board of Supervisors planning retreat. And I know everyone has, board members have set up calls already with Mr. Kimball Payne to do the interviews prior to the retreat. So just saw some up-and-coming things, but we'll send some reminders out just because they're kind of off the regular schedule. But I'm happy to answer any questions that the board has.
All right, we'll move on to item 5, public comment number 1. Anybody wishing to address the board should come to the podium, state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and directed to the board. Anybody wishing to address the board this time?
Good evening. My name is James Kelly, 363 Manor Boulevard, Palmyra, Virginia.
I just wanted to come out and thank this board again publicly during the actual scheduled time of your meeting for calling a special meeting yesterday and enabling us to get access to funds to deal with some of the problems we're having related to the track at the high school. I will note that at 8 o'clock, after a long day of seeing a lot of you a bunch of times, I then went back to the high school around 8, and as football practice was finishing up, the trucks were moving in to build the track. And so by morning, we had an inch and a half milled off the top of the track, and when Mr. Sheridan and I happened to be there at the same time this morning, they were shoveling up the last remains. I'll note that there are, you know, you always find new things as you kind of go through it, and they're working on the contingency and all of that, but I am confident for not having those extra days and hours that we'd have been hard-pressed to start laying the asphalt on Monday. And this is just one of many examples in which your board is not only a partner, but a driving agent for good change and making sure that our schools have what they need when they need it. I know that we, or my understanding is we have some CRM tonight as well in order to do things that must be done to start school on Wednesday. And so just want to communicate my gratitude for the partnership that we enjoy. And looking forward to seeing you all at the first home game on time with a finished field, a finished track, and hopefully a winning record at the end of the evening. So, thank you.
All right, anybody else? Seeing no one, we will close the first round of public comment, and we'll move on to, we have no appointments, no presentations, and action matters. Item A, recognizing Levanta County Fire and Emergency Medical Service volunteers. Mr. True.
Good evening, members of the board. So, for many years, Levanta County has enjoyed volunteer services within its county. Fire companies 1, 2, and 3, Lake Monticello Volunteer Fire Department, Lake Monticello Volunteer Rescue Squad, and Lake Monticello West Water Rescue as well. All of these have provided thousands of hours over the course of the years that have been free of charge, essentially, if you will, and saved a very large amount of money. The hours that the services have dedicated Flint County as residents have provided life-saving measure as well as property, personal property protection. These hours are given to the county by the personnel of each department and are free to assist the public. The emergency service volunteer have shown their dedication and saved the county thousands of dollars. So in recognition of that, I have designed and printed, and if you would like to see it in person, a challenge coin to be presented to each member of all of the local volunteer fire departments and EMS agencies. I ask tonight for the proclamation approval.
All right, well, thank you.
Thank you, sir. The proclamation. Recognizing Flavanna County Fire and Emergency Medical Service volunteers, whereas the volunteers of Flavanna County Volunteer Fire Departments, Lake Monticello Volunteer Fire Department, Lake Monticello Volunteer Water Rescue, and Lake Monticello Volunteer Rescue Squad are dedicated to providing compassionate and life-saving measures to the residents and visitors of Flavanna County, and whereas the men and women of Flavanna County Fire Departments, Lake Monticello Volunteer Fire Department, Lake Monticello Volunteer Water Rescue, and Lake Monticello Volunteer Rescue Squad demonstrate unwavering commitment and bravery in the face of adversity, serving as frontline heroes in our community, and whereas the members of the volunteer firefighting and emergency medical services teams engage in thousands of hours of specialized training and continuing education to enhance their life-saving skills. And whereas through their professionalism, expertise, and selflessness, members of Flavanna County Volunteer Fire Departments, Lake Monticello Volunteer Fire Department, Lake Monticello Volunteer Water Rescue, and Lake Monticello Volunteer Rescue Squad exemplify the highest standards in ensuring that individuals in need receive prompt and effective treatment. And whereas it is appropriate to recognize the value, services, and accomplishments of volunteer firefighters and emergency medical services providers in Fluvanna County. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors, in recognition of the dedication of the aforementioned volunteers, provide them with a small token of appreciation, the Fluvanna County Volunteer Challenge coin, and then adopted this 7th day of August 2024.
Thank you all for your service. Our county.
Yes,
our neighbors. So the coins will be given at some other point.
Correct. Yes. Yes. Mr. True will be working. Mr. True will be arranging with all the different agencies to get the coins out.
So I have a set of coins. We have representation from each one of the departments here, be it a chief or assistant chief level, and we'll be issuing an initial coin to them this evening, and then throughout the course of the next few days to a week, I will be dispersing the remainder of the 290 something coin to the organizations.
Awesome, great idea.
By chance, are we going to try to recognize the ones that were members of the Volunteer Rescue Squad? I know that they dissolved. I don't know if we have enough coins.
I do not, unfortunately, have enough coins for that. I did take into consideration. I wasn't prepared in the numbers of men individuals within the other departments.
Appreciate all.
Anything else
to add? I can't say enough about everything they do, and thank you very much to all the volunteers and the leadership for what they do to protect the land.
And go home and say a prayer. We don't have to put too many hours over the next 2 days.
Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate everything you all do, and also, you know, we've got a lot of folks here in the back, and we appreciate all you do, and also the two members of our board who are volunteers, Mr. Sheridan and Mr. Hodge. We appreciate what you do as well. So,
and kudos to Jim for all you've done and your coordination with him and helping make this happen too. So thank you.
All right. I move the Board of Supervisors approve the proclamation entitled Recognizing Fluvanna County Fire and Emergency Medical Service Volunteers.
Second. Motion made by Mr. Sheridan, second by Mr. Hodge. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0.
If you run short.
Thanks, sir.
If you run short, you'll find somebody.
All right, we move on to item B, appeal of staff interpretation of subdivision ordinance as it pertains to a request and subdivision of tax map 41, section A, parcel 61, that is located on Fairhouse Lane, a private road, per section 19-8-1, the Fluvanna County Code. Mr. Whitman, and your fortune.
And Eric, you can actually leave it there. So actually, we're going to request that the board defer this until August 21st. Mr. Harwick is here tonight. We have spoken on and off during the day by both email and in person. Some new information has come to light, which kind of requires us to kind of take a step back and discuss this a little bit further. So we're asking the board to defer this for 2 weeks until August 21st.
I move the Board of Supervisors to defer the subdivision agent's interpretation of section 19-8-1 of the Fluvanna County Code as it relates to subdivisions on private roads with respect to tax map 41, section A, parcel 61.
Second. Motion made by Mr. Hodge, second by Mr. Goode. All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed?
Can you see your mouth? And I said four. Four votes aye, 5-0.
All right, these are all people.
All right.
Well, good deal,
all right. We don't need to do C. Moving on to D, FY 26 budget calendar. Mr. Young.
Yes. Good evening, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. I'm Charles McAllister. This is my first time getting to speak with you. I am here to present the FY 26 budget calendar. And this was a group effort between finance and admin, so we could give some extra time for nonprofits, because I know last year we were stretched some and you guys did not have a chance to ask questions or find out other items as you wanted to. But this is a reminder that the first Wednesday of every month, the board meeting is at 5 p.m. here in the Circuit Court. the third Wednesday. It is at 6 p.m. And looking down, as you can see, in December, we do have an area highlighted. We're not sure yet if the Fluvanna County Public Schools will be here that night to present their budget.
And let me chime in on that one piece. It's really important to have a preliminary budget, just a preliminary high-level budget discussion. After I did speak to Dr. Gretz, and he noted that it would probably be good this year to have kind of that preliminary discussion with the board at the first meeting in December. I think they're going to maybe look at, you know, doing some things differently. And so just after speaking with Dr. Gretz, he thought it may be, you know, beneficial. Again, they're not going to necessarily come forward with any, like, they're not going to have solid numbers or anything because the state's budget isn't out yet, but maybe just talk about what their budget looks like from a high-level standpoint. So, and then as Ms. McAllister said, you know, we broke up the nonprofits into three different meetings this time, because doing it under two is it's a whole lot for the board and all that. So as it stands right now, we've got one work session for the 18th. Which we also have a regular meeting, and so some of the time crunch with some of this stuff is, so if you remember, because we moved our second regular meeting to 6, it gives us a really short window, because if we normally would do it at 5 p.m., it really only gives us from like 5 to 5:45, 6 o'clock to have those nonprofit work sessions. So there's two of the work sessions that we can only really schedule an hour, but then there's one on, which one was it? Looks like it was the January 2nd. It would actually be after the regular meeting, so that one would start at 7 p.m. So that one could, you know, potentially go longer. We wouldn't be boxed into just limiting the time to 1 hour. So we kind of spread it out between the three sessions. Would that work well for the board?
Sounds good to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, Ms. McAllister, do you want to note any other changes down below?
Yes. As you guys can see, on February the 5th, the county administrator's FY26 budget proposal will come out. Also, February the 5th and February the 12th, this is only tentative for the schools. This is something that I contacted them in reference to, and this may be the correct dates and times for their budget discussion and budget adoption. We do have to set a max tax rate this year for it as well.
And the reason we have to do that, remember, this year is it's a reassessment year, so we have to put out the max tax rate earlier, and
equalized.
Yeah, that's what it is, the equalized tax rate. We have to show the community, okay, well, you know, what is the change and what is the equalized rate, and there's got to be plenty of advertisement between that and really differentiate the equalized tax rate with the budget, so they're kind of two separate things.
And also, the budget work sessions will be held in the Morris Room this year, and we hope to set the proposed FY26 budget and FY25 tax rates for advertising in March, and do a public hearing April the 9th, and hopefully adopt April the 16th, but if not, we do have that extra April 23rd to do that.
And just one other thing of note. So this past season, when we had just strictly work sessions on those odd nights, so last year the board said, let's do those at 5:30. Give some of those that are working time to get out. So we do have the dates that are just solely budget work sessions at 5:30. I'm hoping that still works well for everyone.
The set to match real estate tax rate for February 26th.
Yep.
A certain member of my family's got a big birthday, and we have 35th wedding anniversary. I will not be in town that day.
Okay.
Could we do that the 5th of March and not push that back too far?
I don't think so, because I think we put it, and I can go back and check, and if there's a reason we can, I can come back to the board and offer amendment. I think we have it at this date, because that is, from an advertising standpoint of putting out the equalized rate, that's the earliest that we could do. That's the latest that we could do it.
I have a question. So with the timeline you have here, if there's issues with printing or other stuff, we're giving ourselves enough time, and is there any way we could roll it back a week or two? Then that takes the pressure off the commissioner's office and the treasurer's office.
We say roll like do it a week sooner?
Week or 2 weeks sooner, and then that just takes pressure off everyone.
No. We would almost have to move up everything 1 week, and that would be it would be a little bit of a challenge.
It's a max tax rate.
It's a max tax rate. This is not.
No. But what I'm saying is, the total end of signed, sealed, delivered, go print the bills. To get to our final decision a week or two sooner, basically move everything forward, is there some legislative reason that we're locked into these days?
I don't say there's a legislative reason, but I will bet you that there's a reason, because that puts the commissioner's office has to put their numbers out 2 weeks early, and we're always waiting for those numbers to come.
Okay.
Schools.
So that would be my only thought.
That's just another section. That's tough.
And honestly, too, I mean, again, so as we have on here, we have the schools present their budget February 19th. And remember, this past year, they pushed it back. They asked to push it back 1 week after that. So.
And this is just the max rate, so that doesn't have to be there for the max tax rate.
Yeah, but I hear what you're saying, Mr. Hodge. If there's a way to give some more room, I think the budget calendar is pretty compressed as it is, and I'm just, without completely reconfiguring it, I'm not sure if we could achieve that. I mean, we probably could. We would just have to go back to the drawing board.
Yeah, just so that we understand, so when there's issues or people's got their hair on fire, we know why we're in the position we're in, so that it can be logically explained to the citizens, so they can understand we're not doing this because we just love dragging our feet. There's other reasons, waiting for the state to set the school's budget, or the commissioner has his stuff he has to do in January and February, and then he has to pull the numbers for the personal property. So
how many years ago was it? The state never even told us what they were going to give us until September?
Yeah.
I mean,
when they can.
I promise you, there's a lot of people that are behind us.
Yeah.
So you're okay with not being there?
For that one.
Yeah.
That's just the max, right?
So it sounds like we're not going to make any adjustments.
No. Shouldn't need to. I'll do my best to join virtual.
Okay.
What? Sorry, we had some technical difficulties.
Anything else to add?
Anything else, guys? Any other questions?
Thank you for what you do.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And that was a support as a motion for the budget calendar.
I move that the Board of Supervisors approve the FY26 budget calendar. Second.
Motion made by Mr. Goode, seconded by Mr. Hodge. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye.
Thank you.
All right. Moving on to item E, resolution to perform a speed limit study on Route 15. Mr.
Yep.
I was afraid to say Mr. Dahl. I looked up first to see if.
No, I'll take this. So, yeah, this kind of addresses some of the board's concern that they wanted to see a speed study performed on Route 15 between basically Route 6 and where Dixie is, and going to Winsville Road. You know, the one thing I noted and I made mention in the resolution is that, you know, we certainly want to have a particular interest and brought it to VDOT's attention right in front of the Fork Union Fire Company there, just, you know, making sure that, see if we can, you know, reduce the speed at minimum, at least before that area, but certainly looking at the whole stretch. As you all remember from what Mr. Thornton said before, they'll do a speed study, and you know, if the data warrants it, they can lower it. You know, the one caveat is, and I don't think this will be a problem, if the data says the speed should be more, then they could increase it. But I don't
see 55, so they aren't going to make it more.
No, but again, this is for the whole entire route, so I don't necessarily know that they would say, well, let's make 45 going through right in front of FUMA or something like that. I can't imagine that they would.
Right.
But those are some of the things that could be considered. So I just want full disclosure for the
board. Just to understand a little bit about that moving forward. So let's say that, you know, obviously the goal here, we talked about two specific areas. But because Fort Union, and I'm just using this as an example because you brought it up, because the academy's right there, if the study said, hey, this should be 45, there's no decision point there for us. It becomes 45 because of the speed study.
Correct.
Okay.
If VDOT's data warrants 45 there, then they would change it, and that's they have to make that change.
So there's no, the speed study occurs, and there's nothing necessarily that comes back to us for an action matter necessarily.
Correct. Okay. Now, unless the board wants me to make some tweaks to this, to the stars on here, where you want to see a speed study conducted. A
couple comments about that. Going back to the rules that they gave us talking about Dolly Creek. Houses within 100 feet has to be a certain number of them. There's plenty of houses in 14 within 100 feet of the road, so I can't imagine that's going to even be a thought process.
And plus the school's there, too.
And you got a school there. The second thing is, and this is something riding around with the kids in my driver's ed car, I definitely think you should look at the Weber City side of it, or Winsville Road, Weber City, because where it turns to 35, if those kids, unless I get on them all the time, you got to be running 35 when you get to the sign. If you run through that sign at 55, you all of a sudden come around that curve, and there's the people that are turning into
the BP.
Well, not the BP,
Dollar
General. West Bottom and Dollar General.
Okay.
It's just you come around that curve, and if you're going at 55 and you pass that sign, you're on them quick. So I think it's a good study. I can't even imagine, because his rules were it had to be 10 houses within 100 feet, if I remember.
Yeah.
And there's other stuff in there about street lights and sidewalks. There's a whole bunch of criteria that they use.
Right.
Did you say stoplight? Street lights. We can have one.
All right.
I think we're pretty confident that it wouldn't have an impact there in that middle part near the academy and Rogers Place. I think we're good to go with the two stars.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I've got a motion for the resolution.
I move that the Board of Supervisors approve a resolution entitled A Resolution Requesting a Speed Limit Study on Route 15, James Madison Highway from Route 6, East River Road to Route 612, Winsville Drive in the 14th District.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Billy, seconded by Mr. Sheridan. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Moving on to item F, resolution to reform speed limit study on Route 53.
Yep, and again, this kind of goes back to discussion with the board. I think Mr. Hodge brought it up. So this was talking about a speed limit study from basically the roundabout at Route 53, Route 618 Lake Monticello Road, going all the way to the Albemarle County line. The one thing I can say is, so they have moved the reduced speed sign prior to getting up to Martin's King, but I know Mr. Hodge still had some concerns that the 55 kind of going all the way to the Albemarle County line was potentially still too high. So this is, and again, I can adjust the stars, but I thought that's the area that was discussed.
My thought process on that is, they've now moved the sign past Martin King's Road, and we just talked about that bottom.
Yeah.
And the other driveway that you were referring to, that Ann Mallickson's issue, because that's in Albemarle County.
Yeah.
So I have no other questions, but I think that captures the results.
I can only open a can of worms and say this. Okay. Why is it 55 from Pleasant Grove to EW's?
The only thing I can gather is it's a long straightaway.
One of them is a straightaway, but those two curves that are in there have had multiple fatalities.
I see what you're saying. Right after, yeah. Kind of where the houses are right there?
Well, right after the sheriff's office.
Yeah.
You know, we've had a fatality in that curve. We've had another fatality up another couple hundred yards. So. Now, I know they were 20 years ago. But.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if the board wants me to bring back another speed study for them to do in that area, we could certainly bring that back at a future meeting.
From my understanding, when GNOT was on the board, we worked with VDOT to get a certain section of 53 moving 45, and I think that probably was where that line was.
I mean, I got no issues with it, but if that little mile and a half section is the only section of 55 in Blue Valley County except for the last quarter of a mile, we've had issues there. I mean, we just had a terrible accident where a gentleman got very lucky not long ago, and he's in a uniform.
And yeah, it looks like, I mean, does the board want me to bring back another speed study for VDOT to do in that section? Or
I'm just going to set up a food thought.
I'll probably end up in court with a speeding ticket if that's the case.
Well, you'll have somebody ticket right there, so yeah.
You'll have somebody else probably.
So my question is was speed an issue where those accidents happened? Or
I mean, right now in those curves, there's signs that say, you know, recommended speed, you know, I think it says, is this 35?
I think 35 or 45, but I don't think it's 45, I think it's 35.
So can I suggest that, like, there's a couple people I'd like to ask some questions.
Keep throwing it out there.
Run it till the next
one.
But it's a good call. I mean, Ronnie White had a wreck
years ago. I mean, there, that little stretch where the trees are, from that short curve to Pleasant Grove, has had a lot of wrecks. And one last food thought. I came out of Brewer tonight the other day. You know, we've talked about traffic circles, we've talked about extra turn lanes. Boy, Rangers drive through it in a lower car. If there was some way they could knock 2 feet off of that hill, because what happens is before it gets to Riverton Lake, it kind of does this a little bit to hide the cars coming towards you. If they could just knock 2 feet off of it and repave it, I know that would booger things up for a while, but that's just food for thought. Y'all drive through there and take a look.
Yeah. Oh, I know what you mean.
Because I tell the kids, you got to find the hood, the roof of the car, as they're coming toward you.
I think at some point, because in that intersection, we've had some serious wrecks in that intersection, and I think when VDOT looks at their data, the data that they're looking at probably doesn't include some of those accidents that occurred more recently. So we're still pushing for that intersection, because it is a horrible intersection.
But take a look and think about what I was talking about, because I'm telling you, literally, you've got to look at the roots of the car because you can't see the rest of it.
You're talking about 619 and 53.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you pull up to 619 and look left, it does this a little bit as it comes to the intersection. I always laugh because the 45 sign is always a right answer to that terrible intersection. It was 55 even around that curve.
So was it
VDOT?
Well, no, I was just going to say, you know, I'll definitely reach out to VDOT to see if there's anything that we can do. You know, we brought up that intersection with them multiple times, of it being a problem from cars being backed up on Ruerton Lake. I've seen cars backed up on Ruerton Lake all the way back to Squares Ford Road, if not further before. And it is that little hill or whatever you want to
call it. Yeah, it's just a little. I thought about that just the other day. Never thought about that. But if they could knock that hill down, then you could actually see to your left.
I'll talk to Scott Thornton to see if they have any other options for us.
And there's discussion about making that roundabout at some point, isn't
it? There's discussion about doing some possible turn lanes or something like that and reconfiguring it, but.
But two issues, line of sight to your right when you're turning left off of 53, and then just being able to see to your left because of that hill.
But you never had a Jeep like he has.
I can see all the way back to the store.
Yeah.
Well, I could be able to drive my driver's
car and go right up to your Jeep and wouldn't have the sound.
So that shouldn't interfere with us doing this?
No, that wouldn't interfere with this. I mean, if we were to look at a different section of 53 to do a speed studies, traffic study, whatever, we can do that. But let me reach out to Scott Thornton just to pick his brain on some of that stuff before we
start. We're talking about traffic, Mr. Dan, can I bring up one? Literally, we had our bus drivers in service on Monday, and the guy that drives the high school route that I drive was talking about Crofton. If we can talk to the Monticello guys about
about doing something to just increasing the line of sight, because he looked at me and he went, it's the same thing I've said here. We are one fast car coming around headed north from a T-bone collision with a school bus on the vehicle. Because the line of sight is awful. People get up there in the car and you can see better because I'm sitting two spots, sitting two, yeah. Well, one what direction you look between two trees and a fence, and the other side has a suit. So, if, and it, like, VDOT doesn't do anything with that. They've said that. We've got to talk to Lake Monticello because it's just.
No, Crofton.
When you come over to Crofton, I come over to Crofton and turn left.
Or
there's
right.
Cedar tree right here. Turning right's not much as bad because.
It's only one
lane. Only one lane you got to worry about. When I'm turning left, it's okay, I'm looking between the two trees. Okay, there's nobody there. So now I pull up so I can look right, and when I come back left, here's the car coming. And it's like, we got, the lady has to do something.
Yeah.
You know, anyway. And it wasn't just me, it's when he looked at me and said, oh my God, this is terrible. Go in there in your owner, that you might have the same thing, because you sit far enough back behind the cedar tree, you can't see very far to your right.
Yeah.
And then when you look to your left, it's literally a security fence and two 15-inch trees, and you got about a foot and a half gap. You got to see if there's anybody coming.
Yeah.
So, like I said.
All right. Do we want to? We have a motion.
Yep. I move the Board of Supervisors to approve a resolution entitled "A Resolution Requesting a Speed Limit Study on Route 53 Thomas Jefferson Parkway from the roundabout at Route 618 Lake Monticello Road and Holdfield Drive to the Fluvanna Albemarle County line in the Palmyra District."
Second. Motion made by Mr. Hyde, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0.
And Eric, there's no action items for Carey's Creek, correct?
Yeah, and just I'll give the board just a quick update because I think the board was included in those. There was a resident on Carey's Creek Road that initially requested a traffic study. Well, there's a couple things. One requested some information about paving, a deaf child sign, and then just the speed in general. So Carey's Creek Road, if you all know or don't know, I mean, so a lot of houses have been built down Carey's Creek Road, and it's a gravel road. So right now, with it being a gravel road, and currently there's no speed limit signs, so the speed limit is 35 miles per hour. Now, I'm not sure, I can tell you that the property owner, the resident that reached out to me said there's no way they're going 35 miles per hour. So I requested from VDOT to put some speed limit signs on the road. And so they're doing that, no action needed from the board. They're just doing that regarding the paving. So it currently does not classify as a rural rustic road to be entered into paving. You have to have 50 cars traversing the road per day. Now, maybe at some point down the road, it may be.
I'm bet you it's pretty doggone close because you've now got Mr. Spitzer still sitting back. How many houses on that road now?
45.
I was going to say 15. 15?
7, 8.
Is that all?
Yeah. At least 7 or 8, and they got about 4 more lots cleared off ready to go.
That's what I'm saying. We're getting close enough that it's going to be pretty close to 50 cars per day.
Yeah,
and I think you got a couple on my side going to build on their property, so that'll add on theirs.
But again, so VDOT was going to be doing some, so regarding there was a concern about dust, so they were going to be doing some applications to reduce dust. They're doing some speed limit signs, and then I've notified the sheriff's office too about just some of the speeding. So I think once the speed limit signs are there, hopefully people will get the message, and if not, maybe the sheriff's office will give the message. But the resident was happy with that outcome right now, and then if things, you know, don't get better with some of those things, then he'll reach back out.
Do we know when the last time they did a traffic count was?
I do not have that information. I think Scott Burton said they did one and it didn't qualify, but I don't know what the date was.
If it was done before then all these houses are being built, it'll be totally different.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Huh?
It should not. But if the cars go by my camera, there's 50 there.
Yeah.
I'm going to bet you this pretty big. They need to do a count on that,
brother. I'll reach out to them and see when it was on last.
So then, as long as we're on subject, I'm going to wait till we do this, but Mike brought up also the Roger Warden, Dobby Creek Road, talking about the speed study there. And I talked to Roger recently and explained that it could go up if that's what the data shows. And his request as the citizen who put it out there to us is that we do proceed with having the speed study done there. If y'all remember what we're talking about here, down there in Scottsville.
And I'm telling you, if it's 10 houses within 100 feet of the road, it's going to be really close to being more than 10, because there's five or six right at the painted landing end that are all within 50 feet of the road.
So we had said that we'd step back, let him know that it could go to, actually, that it actually could go up, although not likely. And then I talked to him, and he's requested that we go forward.
Okay, so bring back speed study on Dobby's Road. Is Dobby's Creek Road?
Dobby Creek.
Dobby Creek, yeah.
All right. Moving on to consent agenda. Anybody have anything to report from that? All right. Anybody want to make a motion to?
So moved.
We have a second.
To adopt.
Yeah, I got you.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Hodge. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. All right, we'll move on to unfinished business. I just took care of mine.
Business.
Nothing there. Moving on to new business.
Yep, so the declaration of local emergency. So, you know, the governor put out a declaration from the Commonwealth. Was that yesterday or?
Yesterday.
Yesterday. And so really what that does, that provides resources to the Commonwealth should really anything occur. Same thing with a local declaration. If we implement a local declaration, it would, one, if we meet any thresholds for any like FEMA reimbursement or things like that, at some point we would have to call a local declaration. You can do it before the event, or we could do it after the event and do it retroactive. We thought just to do it now, just to be proactive and to have it in place. You know, right now, some of the things they're talking about, I mean, so a lot of the meetings that Mr. True and myself have been in, you know, they're calling for in this area 4 to 6 inches of rain, with some areas potentially localized a little higher. I've seen some areas in the western part of the county through some of the initial radar maps that shows close to 7 inches. I think it was close to 7.5 inches of rain in one spot. You know, so you have that, you know, winds are projected to be really high, about 20, 30 miles per hour. If you get a lot of wet trees, wet ground, you know, who knows what happens with the trees if they go down with power. So to be a little proactive, you know, it was thought to bring forward a declaration of a local emergency, kind of that coincides with what the governor did for the Commonwealth.
Now, talking about this, and I mentioned this to you today, with this, if we were to shut the county offices, what effect would that have on us financially?
I don't think that necessarily would. I mean, I think really the only effect is, really the big effect is from a FEMA standpoint. I mean, so to have a local declaration allows some speed, and Dan chime in if I'm wrong on anything, allows some speed of purchasing or procurement items if we need to do things from an emergency purchase standpoint. It also has in place that we have declared a local emergency. So if there is any FEMA reimbursement, and there's usually certain dollar amount thresholds that have to be met per FEMA for those reimbursements to be applicable. So we're not sure if there's gonna be it, but figure have it in place in case it's needed. But like I said, you know, if the board doesn't want us to declare it now, we could always do it after the fact and make it retroactive back to a date as well. Those are the two options.
I don't see why you wouldn't. I had some questions on this. So in instances where you use these emergency powers to to bypass normal procurement rules. Yeah. Is that something that then gets briefed back to the board and we're made aware?
Well, yeah, I mean, didn't you want to chime in?
No, I mean, we could come back and have a briefing of what items were purchased during that period when there was local emergency.
Or if there's anything of substance. I mean, if we're just buying, you know, if Mr. True or whatever they had to buy some extra chains for the saws and what have you, you know, I mean, we could certainly brief the board on whatever they want, but just from that, I mean, this would really streamline things if it was maybe larger items that we needed to get quicker.
Well, we can reimburse if you have to stay at the firehouse and be a lead.
Yeah. The next question I had was, do we have an emergency plan for hurricane or flooding?
So there, we have an emergency operations plan, but I can't speak to any of the specifics. So the county has hazard mitigation plan, mm-hmm. and within there it talks about certain things, but I can't tell you specifically right now.
So and kind of go along with that, after we have an event like this, if you don't have a plan, it's a perfect time, because you've experienced, to draft your plan. And could the IAP then be coordinated with your individual agencies that have to then implement, you know, sub portions of it?
Mr. Potter, the board.
Yeah, Jeff Potter, Assistant Chief, Kent Store Fire. We do have an IAP currently for Kent Store, and it's up to each individual agency to create an IAP for the event. And I'm speaking to this piece from experience as a member of DHS, pre-DHS. Mm-hmm. Stafford Act requires local emergency declaration before the feds can come in and help. Yeah. So the biggest problem we saw in 05 with Katrina was the lack of declaration before we could come in with resources to assist at the airports for the hospitals and things that we established. So that's one of the benefits of preemptive declarations that opens that gate as far as Stafford Act is concerned. Mm-hmm. So IAP is individual to the agency. I don't think we have a countywide IAP. And the EOC is going to be ready to be activated, but it's not going to be activated as part of this declaration.
Was that part of the issue that we had back when the snowstorm came?
Correct.
5 years ago, yes. We didn't declare, so we were behind getting stuff.
Correct.
I will say the biggest thing was just getting all the information, because there was a lot of things per that whole
the snowstorm?
Snow event, a lot of things weren't documented, so it's trying to go back and recreate records and all that to make sure that we're adequately reimbursed for everything.
Sorry, specific to the snowstorm, there were communication problems, so because of the radio system interference that we had from the person that was interfering, and so we weren't able to get requests for resources even to the EOC. We had to go on the talk around to try to communicate, if you remember. So that was number one. Number two, getting resources in the county due to travel restrictions, that was the other piece. So typically they try to pre-stage assets to make that response faster, which is why they loosened a little bit of the requirements around the Stafford Act, but we still have to do it to get them in. And I don't know what they've done at the state level yet, but I believe Governor Youngkin did declare an emergency. Mm-hmm.
So. Mr. True, do you have anything you want to add, or?
So I think one of the big process behind this, actually, Mr. Potter just touched on, being a proactive type of environment, we're expecting 4 to 6 inches plus, winds down, trees down. Our ability to go back and recoup expenses for the county that might be nominally lost in the process. So Jack is out there with, and I'll pick on Kent Store a minute, Jack's out there with Kent Store and he spends 6 hours out there with a chainsaw. He's got fuel, he's got wear and tear, he's got chainsaw blades. This is not something that my understanding, speak with him with the local chiefs, is something that we've tracked in the past. And this is part of trying to get in front of that, is to make sure that we're tracking that 6 hours. And we're going back and saying, hey, we've got 17 people that were out there with 5 hours and chainsaws and usages, and that is money we can bring back. The other part of it is, by having the declaration in place, it does open the communications with VDEM, saying, hey, and we're already posted on the WebOck, which is one of the programs that we're monitoring for the EOC. So it's a matter of, we've already declared, and now we're seeing a fuel issue. That's going to bump us up in the list because we already have the declaration, rather than having to come back to you and say, we need an emergency meeting to make a declaration for an emergency. So the whole process behind this really is going to be a preemptive type of an environment.
And the last question I had was kind of in the, with what Mr. Sheridan said. He was talking about closure. Do we have a continuity government plan? And should we lose any facilities, do we know where we're going to go and how we're going to deal with that?
If we lose facilities?
Yeah.
That's an excellent question, Mr. Hodge.
And if that's fine if we don't.
No, I...
But if we do, if we don't, then maybe that's something we need to consider about putting in place as a minimum, you said, a continuity government plan.
Hey, if I may, August 15th, Virginia Department of Emergency Management Region 3 Coordinator is coming to visit the county. I've actually asked them to come into the county to get us up to par and set in place for information and things that need to be updated, such as what it is you're discussing, and the emergency plan and the hazard mitigation plan and things along those lines. So they are visiting us for 2 hours on the morning of the 15th. And then we have also reinstituted the local emergency planning committee, which will meet at 11 o'clock on the 15th as well, to bring back to the table the different players, if you will, within county to really ramp up the emergency management side of the game.
All right.
But the local shelters, and we just don't have that much as far as shelters that would have generator power and
Well, I mean, for shelters, I mean, the high school is our shelter of record. I mean, if there's any big event, that's where it would go. And then social services would be involved, the Red Cross. And so that is our designated shelter. But, you know, one thing we've been trying to do is try to, you know, again, we got the grant for the generator to go to the community center, trying to have some other locations if we needed to do something quicker too. But we don't have a whole lot of shelter operations. We do lack a little bit of some buildings having generators. The admin building, for instance, well, this building has a generator, but I mean, I don't think the courts want just everyone coming in. The admin building has a generator, but it's very limited in what it functions during a power outage.
So I was going to save it too. Well, do we have a motion on this? And then you brought up something.
I move Board of Supervisors to consent to the declaration of a local emergency by Eric Dahl, Director of Emergency Management, which is effective Thursday, August 8th, 2024, beginning 1 a.m. in response to potential impacts of Tropical Storm Debbie. Do we want to have an ending time?
No, because we have to bring something back to the board to end the
session. Second. All right. Motion made by Mr. Sheridan, second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. And I'll bring up a citizen next week. I saw on Facebook today, and there could be plenty of reasons why not, but brought up why the Lake Monticello Clubhouse wouldn't be disaster.
Yeah, like a shelter?
Yeah, I mean, if you have, 42% of our county living there, and of course this would have to be worked out with them, it just seemed like, of course, there's a big facility where there's a mass of our population that lives. I don't know about their generators and...
Yeah, we're going to make that until we get permission from them to make that.
Yeah, they got solar panels on the roof.
What's that?
They got solar panels on the roof to generate electricity.
What are you trying to bring up now?
I had to train on that, so I know they're good.
What did you say, Doug?
We've had discussions in the past with them about that.
Yeah. So I'll initiate and see where that left, if they have a record of them, what their interest is. or you can, I mean.
No, I mean, like I said, you know, I just had a meeting with Lake Monticello. I have quarterly meetings with them, with generally the general manager and some folks from Lake Monticello. So, I mean, it's definitely something I can bring up again, and it's a good discussion point. I feel like it was discussed sometime in the long, long past, but yeah, I don't remember.
Or something like that.
There was something discussed, but I don't recall what the outcome was. Okay. So I can bring it back up.
We use, in Jim's store, we use the ARC only.
So I was just talking to Jim because he and I both were in North Carolina in 1999 for Hurricane Floyd. One of the things that I saw during that time frame is people congregated around their places of faith. Mm-hmm. So we had a lot of people sheltering at churches. We had people sheltering in community centers. But the other piece of that is you have to have, I'll step up to the mic, you have to have people to run these shelters. And so we came in as a federal team to help run, especially special needs shelters for people like at the nursing homes. They take more care than just a normal bed. So those are the types of areas people congregate. So working hand in hand, and I know that Director Tru is just coming into that role, but those are all good options, and those are ones that I've seen in real life experience in real life events.
And a generator would be a natural.
Absolutely.
Must, right?
Yeah, I mean, generator's necessity, because we all have water here from wells, so if you have power, you have water. Clean water, and from a public health standpoint, clean water and septic and those things are very important to keeping people healthy. Okay. And you get people in a high school, for instance, Edgecombe County used the high school as their shelter of record, and they had thousands of people living there, and they had some unsanitary conditions after a few weeks. So. Please factor that into your plan.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. And really quick. Let me see that one more time. So Kim May, but Miss May was listening. So she said there was a shelter at the clubhouse once, but it had no power, and the county could staff two shelters, is what was said.
So I mean, I think we should probably have another special work session or something like that on this, but. Do we currently own any portable generators? Trailable portable generators? Do we have some of those? I don't think we have some.
Have any portables like that?
I don't think
so. But that's something we might want to consider.
Yeah, I mean, the
4 or 5 of them.
It ends up whoever has a generator sitting around takes it and goes and uses it.
Well, I mean, mostly.
Yeah, it's on the road.
Yeah, you're talking about a big generator coming on a trailer or something like that. I mean, that would. We were successful with getting a fairly good grant for the one generator from the community center. So maybe as we move forward, we start looking at some additional grant opportunities to whether it's a generator on a trailer or just generators for other buildings and stuff for other little shelters or cooling stations that we want to have.
I mean, taking that for example, the problems that they had at the Albemarle Water Authority, right? Their generators failed, the whole system got all flooded, after JWA, who knows, right? I mean, those are the kinds of things that maybe we need to at least have a small fleet of those that we can bring to bear if needed.
Yeah, the JWA has a big generator.
And I get that. I think you give an example of the potential areas that you didn't think of where this comes up.
Yeah, we can take a look at that, see if there's other opportunities. I mean, there's the nice thing is it seems like through some of those, as we've been looking, it seems like there's always some good opportunities, especially if we haven't been awarded grant funds previously. So it's something to look at.
So you had another couple items you
next is the digital inclusion planning. So this one's pretty simple. I mean, it's a memorandum of agreement with Virginia Department of Housing Community Development Block Grant. It's a planning grant program, but it's really within the localities of like Savannah, Albemarle. Albemarle would be acting as like the administrator and fiscal agent if we receive grant funds, and it's really just to kind of help just kind of find gaps in our digital divide and stuff like that. fortunately for us, you know, we are pretty fortunate from the CBAC Firefly standpoint that we've got good coverage, whereas a lot of other localities don't quite have that benefit like we do. But this would just allow us, if we find any little gaps in our digital footprint in the locality, it would provide some planning grant funds, and Louisiana County would specifically get to dictate kind of what we want to use those for. And again, there's no match from the county for this, and there's no necessarily staff time for it either. Besides, there would be some coordination, but we're not the fiscal agent, we're not the administrator.
I move the Board of Supervisors authorize the county administrator to execute a multi-jurisdictional memorandum of agreement to apply for a Virginia Department of Housing and Community Development Grant Program Planning Grant.
Okay. Motion made by Mr. Doe, second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0.
And Mr. Witten looked at this MOU too. And then the last one is, so this is regarding the special call meeting yesterday. Mr. Hodge came into the meeting. We didn't do the proper certification at the beginning of the meeting since he was attending virtually. So
Mr. Hodge joined the meeting. It was in the middle of the item. So actually, I didn't realize he had joined until the vote occurred. So we would just need Mr. Hodge to state where he was calling in from, the address, and the reason you were calling in.
I was calling in from Virginia Beach. And I was down there with fire business with Chief Constantino. And didn't get back until 5-6 last night.
And then just for the record, the three members that were attending in person, we just need a vote to accept his attendance virtually.
So moved.
Second. Motion made by Mr. Goode, second by Mr. Sheridan.
Aye.
Chair votes aye.
3-0.
3-0.
Three zero two. Because he wasn't part of the team.
And just for clarification, did Mr. Hodge notify you that he'd be attending virtually?
He did.
He did. Okay. So we have that step as well.
Yeah. He let, yeah. He,
well, in advance.
Okay. He let me in.
And I notified him I would not be attending.
Correct.
That should cover.
Thanks. In regard to yesterday's meeting, I just want to clarify. I had said that I mixed two things when I was talking about the wind saw where they had taken the core out of the track. And I was also talking about that the drains that run down each side of the field had been clogged. And looking back today, it made it sound like I was saying that those drains were still currently clogged. It was early April when I saw the clock. They have since long been fixed.
Are those all the items we had before?
Yes. Just kind of comment that special meeting just for public knowledge. The importance of it was, even though it was just yesterday, that the contractor required the purchasing and occupancy side to approve by the board, and that the board had to have discussions to try to make it so that we could wait until Wednesday, but it was upon the assistance of the contractor. So the board was trying to be proactive in ensuring that it was part of the regular order instead of a special meeting. But there was
if they did any work before we went through our meeting, it would not be warranted.
And the hurricane was almost certain to bring rain, and they were right on the very last possible amount of days to get it done before the home game, and their home games are where they create revenue for boosters and so on. So all around, it seemed it was going to get voted for either way, so why not help the schools and help them get it done? All right.
I had one new business item. There was brought to my attention that there was a fire truck that was potentially for sale. This is something we talked about this yesterday, Mr. Sheridan. And there was a locality, not an adjacent locality, but a small locality, smaller than ours, Charlotte County, Drake's Branch, that was interested in purchasing said fire truck. And I don't know the process of really what that would entail, or what. I know we usually auction these things off. There seems to be some discrepancy on what we could get on, what is it, Gov Bids or Gov Deals or something, versus what Drake's Branch is willing to pay us for the vehicle. So I did want to bring that up and see if we could. I talked to you offline about it, I think, about what it could be worth. I don't know enough about that kind of stuff. I don't know. I guess my thought would be if we're going to get something from some locality out in Nevada or California or wherever, if we're going to get the same amount, you know, we might as well see if we can help out an adjacent, you know, a neighbor, if you will.
So I'll address some of it, and I'll let Dan talk the details. So our purchasing policy says that we have to competitively get a fair market value for whatever we're selling. And so necessarily just to say we're just going to sell it to this one, we don't know if that one is giving us the best value, because maybe if you put it out for a RFP or put it on GovDeals, maybe someone offers the county more for it. And so that's kind of what the county's surplus policy says. And anything you want to add to that, Mr. Whitten?
Correct. So we do have a surplus policy we have to follow unless the board waives the policy and wants to go through a different process. But that's the way we sell, you know, sheriff's vehicles, any other vehicles, just on gov deals.
So we've done it before with, what was it, Cartersville, I think?
Please don't bring that up.
It's complicated when you do those kinds of deals. So
well, that one was done without us sitting here like this and discussing.
That was done by the company.
That was done by the company, but it was also owned, I believe, by the company at that time. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I don't remember. I know exactly what you're talking about. I don't remember the specific
anyway, that's what I'm going to agree. But with this one, if we got, so you're saying if we had three people to say, you know what, let's offer to them for $10,000, $12,000, $15,000.
The board could waive the policy and come up with a fair market value and basically sell it to that voluntary agency for that price.
I had talked with Eric about this, and I think you communicated with the county, correct?
Yep.
And basically the response he got was, well, they don't pay for fire trucks. Is that accurate?
Yeah, the response I got was, well, the reason for the request was their county does not provide funding for their volunteer agencies to purchase fire trucks, so they're wondering if the county could sell them this fire truck, one of the fire trucks, I guess, one of them, maybe it's a tanker that we have, tankers that we have coming up that will be available.
So Eric and I had some conversation of, well, if their county won't fund their volunteer fire departments, why would we?
Well, they're asking them, and I get your point there, and I think we're not just handing it over. And now, if and again, I'm not one that knows how to appraise a tanker, right? So I don't know, but my thought process was if it's $10,000 that we would get fair market value, if we sell it to them for $10,000, we're not really, it's not us necessarily funding them. Now, if we could get fair market value as appraised and whatever, and it was $30,000, then yeah, I guess we're giving them sort of $20,000 off of what we could be getting, and that's kind of charging our taxpayers because they don't fund them. But if all things are equal, my thought would be we could help someone out who needs something and has the money and is willing to pay for it. Now, if it's going to cost us, our taxpayers $20,000 on the back end, I don't know that I could be for that. But if it's not going to cost our taxpayers a dime and we're doing somebody a favor by helping them out, that's something that I could definitely get on board with.
I've got a possible compromise. So you can follow the normal procurement things listed on GovDeals. Let them know we've listed it. And they can put a bid on GovDeals up to the maximum amount that they're willing or can afford to pay. And if nobody else bids, it'll sell to them for $1 unless we put a reserve on it.
Well, yeah, because that's what it is. I mean,
so they might get an even better deal by going that route rather than us setting an arbitrary amount. And then we followed our procurement rules. It goes at fair market value, whatever that may be, but they may get it cheaper than the $10,000.
Well, whenever we sell things on GovDeals, anything of substance, we always put some type of minimum on whatever it is we're selling. Even if it's we're selling a pallet of old laptops or something like that, we always have generally some type of minimum. Now, maybe some of the smaller things, maybe we have left those. Do we always have a minimum or some of them? We always have some type of minimum that we're willing to accept for whatever we're selling. Well,
what would you put as the minimum?
For this fire truck?
Yeah.
I think we would have to investigate. Again, I can say I don't know what a tanker truck is
valued at. Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Real quick, just do we know what we've gotten for fire apparatus in the past?
Not necessarily, because up until not too long ago, the way that the county was doing it, the companies were selling the apparatus, and they were keeping the funds, because if you remember, the county would previously, the county would only fund a certain amount of that apparatus, and then if the companies wanted to do above and beyond that amount, they would fund some additional amount, and I think because we did that, the county always said, well, when they sell it, they kept the proceeds from it. Now, the county, because we're basically paying the full freight for all the apparatus, so when they're being sold or surplus, we keep the funds for it.
So this will be the first one?
There may be one, Mr. Sheridan. I would have to go back and see. I feel like there was maybe at least one that we did, and I just don't recall what the amount was. And maybe we got... Maybe we received a recommendation of what to sell it from one of the chiefs. I don't recall. It's been probably at least 3 years.
I think two.
Two
and
years.
We did receive a recommendation from the chief.
Yeah.
What to set that minimum bid.
Yeah.
So this for the engine 10?
I mean, no, not this one. For a one we sold previously.
Do you remember what that minimum was?
I know that's far off.
I want to say it was between 4 and 5.
1,000.
Yeah, I don't. We can go back and look. I mean, but if
this is it, fine. See what happens.
Well, there's a company called Atlantic Fire, Services, and they specialize in selling used equipment, as an example. So
we can find them.
Yeah, it's pretty easy to find that stuff out.
Okay.
Well, it's got to be better ways than what we sell last year.
Right.
And so there's a lot of people selling used fire trucks. So there's then used to find out what the value is, and I agree if they can get it for fair market value, then that means there's others out there at the same price who really, unless I'm misunderstanding something, really do them a solid by selling it to them at fair market value, except for if we just bypass the bid process, whereas they could have gone higher than that. If the fair market value is, say, $15,000, then we should be looking to get $15,000 and maybe say, okay, you want to go through the bid process, but you could get it for less at 12, and you could get it for 18.
Because part of Dove deals, there is the buyers have to pay, and I don't recall what the percentage is. They have to pay some type of percent premium.
It's 12.5%.
12.5%. There we go.
To
Gov deals, yes.
Yeah. So can we just charge you all to try and find out what the fair market value is? And there's got to be ways.
Yeah, and one thing, Ms. Melton, I don't think that any of the tankers have been surplus to us at this point, have they, officially?
No, the one that we sold was actually an old Fork Union tanker, and it was broken. So
but I'm talking about, but there, I know there's been some tankers that have been, I think tankers that have been replaced as of recently.
Yes, but we haven't sold it.
Well, but the companies haven't officially surplus those items to the county
yet.
No. I think there's one that's been replaced, but the old one hasn't been surplus to us.
So you're all going to just come back to us with a recommendation of what the value is?
They kind of, that's fine. But I mean, I had to ask this. I'll wait until the next time we have this conversation, because I know somebody that bought a retired fire truck on Cove deals, a ladder truck. I believe it was $3,000.
It seems like maybe, just looking at it briefly, that, for certain items, Cove deals like for specialized items, then maybe it may be worth talking to a company that specializes in selling those things.
Yeah.
To say, well, what would you give us for this?
What did you say that company's name was?
They're sure there's a bunch. They take a long
time. He's talking about Atlantic.
That's Atlantic.
We work with them.
Yeah. Atlantic, there's a Fire Truck Center.
There's multiple ones
that are buying and marketing and selling this. And so if we make an offer to them, and traditionally, and then we look and say, well, at Gov deals, you get less value than you do that way by the time you put the 12.5% in. You start to kind of figure out maybe the better place to sell it, right?
Yeah, if the board wants us to investigate maybe some selling options or venues, we can certainly do that.
Mr. Goh's original point is good to be neighborly, but
you know, our responsibility is to the Savannah taxpayers and not to the taxpayers of Chicago County.
And our policy says we should try to get competitive bids if possible.
Yeah.
So
what's that?
Our policy says we should try to get competitive bids if possible. So not just offer
us 1%. Yeah.
Not just like the other folks. Okay.
Well, I have two, but I'll just bring up again when their county says, well, we just don't fund it. It's then we're helping. We're they're not in a hardship. We're just funding what right now.
I agree to the extent where if we're giving it to them, then less than what we could get it for, that we would be funding them when their county doesn't. Yes, but I want to reiterate that I would not be in favor of if this is going to cost the taxpayers of Savannah County, quite frankly, a dime. I don't think this is something that I'd be necessarily willing to entertain, much less if we can get 30 and they're offering 10. And I mean, that's $20,000 essentially that the Savannah County taxpayers are funding Charlotte County. Yeah. But if this, and just to reiterate my point, is that if it's not costing us taxpayer money, I think I'm probably in Mr. Sheridan's camp of we can help out a neighbor. And I could probably get some more information on why they want this particular one or why it serves them better to maybe not go through a bid process. But I think when you go through a bid process, you're obviously, you know, you're my understanding was that they have $10,000 that they have raised volunteer funds for the fire department that they're willing to say, if you're willing to give it to us for 10, we'll give you 10. And my understanding is that even if it's worth 8, they're still willing to give the 10 that they've raised for. So quite frankly, if it's worth 5 and they're willing to give us 10, we gain $5,000 for our taxpayers. So.
And you know, the thing I'll add to that is, I think the reason they want to contact us to buy it now is expedience.
Mm-hmm.
In the town
policy. Yeah.
So we got our county policies that we will try to add up and match to those along with finding out the value, and then we can just bring it back next meeting.
Yeah, and again, I think we officially need the companies to say it's being surplus now, because again, technically it's not. I mean, it's in the county's purview, but they haven't said it's a surplus item at this point.
And if my understanding is, if we were to say, okay, we're going to just sell direct with you, that we would have to circumvent policy,
correct?
Right? That's what Dan said.
Yeah. I'm just saying, I would not be in favor of circumventing policy.
Okay. So that's a bad precedent.
Yeah, that's another thing to consider.
So let's see what agrees, right?
Yeah, more information.
Check the reserve policy at 10,000.
More information is not going to hurt.
No.
All right, we'll open our second round of public comment. Anybody wishing to address the board should come to the podium, say your name and address. Remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic and reference. Anybody wishing to address the board?
I'm Jeff Potter, Assistant Chief Kent Store. So I wanted to thank the board for funding the crews that are stationed at Company 3. Wanted to give a report back. It's going very well. We've had some great response times as a result of it. The crews are working great. Of course, Jim True's a great director, so it's been a good experience for us. And so wanted to thank you guys for that. And I was going to make a small correction to Jim's resolution. We've saved billions of dollars for the county.
Per year.
Thousands.
Per year.
Per year.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, his payroll is probably, what, 2.5, something like that? Yep. So you know, we're going to be here as long as we can be here for those of us that are dedicated. And you know, thank you for your continued support of all of us. So that's it.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Sure. Mr. Chair, I move the Fannin County Board of Supervisors to enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A1, Section 2.2-3711A5, Section 2.2-3711A8, as amended for the purpose of discussing personnel and determining performance evaluation, prospective industry, prospective business updates in the Columbia District, legal matters. There are two items: a license agreement to utilize Pleasant Grove Proper Park, and a contract user grant under the water and sewer ordinance.
Mr. Chair, point of order. Could you close the public comment before we move on this? Yeah, thank you, Mr. It will close public comment, seeing nobody before to speak, and then
you want second.
I will second. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, second.
Thank you. Motion, who made the motion?
Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. O'Brien.
And I second.
And second by Mr. Chairman, all in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 5-0.
I move close meeting be adjourned to the Savannah County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify to the best of each member's knowledge one only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under section 2.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered.
Second. Motion made by Mr. Bryan, seconded by Mr. Hodge. Roll call.
Aye.
Aye.
There you go, call the names.
O'Brien.
Aye.
Hodge.
Aye.
Goad.
Aye.
Sheridan. Chair votes aye. 5-0.
Mr. Chair, I move that the board approve the resolution authorizing the revised development agreement between Fluvanna County, the Economic Development Authority of Fluvanna County, and Zion Three Notch LLC.
Second.
Well, good, Mr. O'Brien. Motion made by Sheridan, seconded by O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 5-0.
I move the board of supervisors approve a supplemental appropriation to the FY25 economic development budget for $250,000 from unassigned fund balance. For that. Does that mean we're dead?
You, I think you can keep going.
Good.
You're fine.
For the development agreement between the County of Fluvanna, Zion Three Notch LLC, and the Economic Development Authority of Fluvanna County.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Sheridan, seconded by Mr. Goad. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 5-0.
I move we adjourn.
Second.
Not to beat me to it.
Motion made by Mr. Hodge, seconded by Mr. Goad. All in favor?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. 5-0.